That's 1-800-222-WPFW or go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, 1-800-222-WPFW or go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd
I do?
Turn around.
Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on. I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Crossroads. I want to say hello again to all of our friends and family worldwide, globally. For those men and women who are in cells, dormitories, detention facilities, and jails, you can vote, you can participate in the electoral process indirectly by having your families, loved ones, sisters, brothers, wives vote on your behalf. This is National Voting Day. The election is November the 5th today. And folk, please, we're asking everybody to vote. If you want to change the criminal justice system or impact things that affect you, you have to vote. And this is our second hour of a two-hour special. Every first Tuesday of the month, we do a two-hour show live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. And we finished the first hour where we're dealing with the returning citizens and the voting rights in Washington, D.C. and nationally. The second hour, we have two gentlemen who I'm quite sure that most of you are familiar with. We're waiting on one, but right now joining us is Robert White, D.C. City Councilman at large in Washington, D.C. And before I bring him on, I just want to say thank you, Robert White, for... We had a rally on the steps of the district building 2 years ago protesting housing and unemployment and the lack of resources for those men and women coming out of prison. Every month, over 200 to 300 men are released in Washington, D.C. from the prison system, and most of them don't have anything. So we have a gentleman of all the city councilmen, the only one that showed up to support us on December the 19th was Robert White. And I like him because we got the same barber. He just cut our hair clean.
Oh, man. I'm glad to be with you, Roach. That was a cold day.
Man.
It was important that we were there.
And we went to, my wife and I caught COVID that day. We went to the hospital right after the rally.
My God.
And we've been having these rallies, man. And you're one of the few people that I can turn to. Yeah. We can turn to and say, man, we need your help. And you've been trying to do what you can because we have a crisis within a crisis within a crisis. So good morning, City Councilman Robert White. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking your time out for your busy schedule. And also joining us is our guest from the previous hour, Charles Thornton, because Charles is a wizard on top of these issues.
Yes.
So good morning, Robert White. Thank you for joining us. And we hope that we can share some insight to our people who's listening to the show. We wanted to talk about what's going on with the returning citizen population in Washington, D.C., particularly about the lack of housing, jobs, employment. Because I don't know if you know this, but there's 79 million people in America with criminal records. 79. We got over 70,000 returning citizens in Washington, D.C., and these folks are coming out after 40, 50 years with nowhere to go, nowhere to stay. And how do you come home and there's no home? It's not even a city no more. What you knew when you left is no longer in existence. So we asked Councilman White to come in to share some insights on what we can do or what he's doing to help us with our population, and particularly on the day, which is November the 5th, the day to vote. And that, as we said in the previous show, council member, that when Myron Barrett came out in 94, we mobilized a returning citizen voting block to enable him to get into, back into the office. And as a result, he created the Office of Ex-Offender Affairs. And I was the first director. Charles had been one of the directors. Several other people have been directors. And Myron started things that are still in effect now. He's been gone for some time. And we're still feeling the impact of Myron Pryor's decisions and his wisdom. So I'm throwing the mic to you, Councilman. What do you know about the situation with returning citizens? What can we do, or what can you do to make sure we can improve or help or assist those who are in dire need?
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. So, you know, because it's election day, I'm going to start with what we can do, which is vote. I'm on the ballot today, but I say, when you asked me to come on, I said, I'm going to take an hour out of my day to sit with you, because this is important work. So what we can do is vote, and it does matter who you vote for. And let me say more about that. Without people voting for Marion Barry, we wouldn't have the agency that serves returning citizens. We wouldn't have Summer Youth Employment Program. We wouldn't have the diversity of millionaires and high-level professionals that he put into place. So it absolutely matters who you vote for. Now, in the two terms I've been on the council, I've worked to take Barry's work and to keep pushing it forward, because we can't stagnate. So the office he created, now called the Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens Affairs, in my first term in the council, I tripled the size of that office, so that when people are coming home, they're not just being handed a piece of paper saying, go talk to these people, but have folks who can help them find jobs and help them find housing. Now, I listened to returning citizens who said, we need help with transportation costs. So we created a free the transportation, public transportation for people when they come home. We created a free birth certificate and ID program for returning citizens. I created housing vouchers specific for returning citizens. And then we passed the bill 4 years ago, making DC the only jurisdiction in the nation to restore the right to vote to all incarcerated people who never should have lost that right to begin with. This is a relic of Jim Crow. Now, we remember we read about literacy tests before people could vote, vagrancy laws before people could vote. All of these things, all these laws that were passed to keep Black people from voting, all of them have been disposed of except felony disenfranchisement. And now I teach this issue as a course at Georgetown University Law School, because I want other young people to do what we did in D.C. and other parts of the country. But the reason it matters is whether or not you vote is because just because returning citizens have been a priority for me, we need to make sure we elect people who are also going to prioritize formerly incarcerated and currently incarcerated people, because no one person can do it by themselves. So I need more help on these issues. But it starts with a vote, and people got to show up to vote.
You got a man beside you who's working on getting out to vote.
Not a man, the man.
Yeah, again, and I want to thank Councilmember White for the legislation put forward that did give the individual with felony convictions the right to vote in the district. One of the things that we were talking about on the last show was the fact that because of an arrest and a conviction, that a person does not give up their citizenship. And voting is one of the things about voting is your citizenship.
Okay.
You know, and the premise behind the terminology that we use in the district, returning citizen, was based on that fact, the fact that you never give up your citizenship. You leave the district as a citizen, you return to the district as a citizen, and you retain your right to vote as a citizen. So that's something that we really wanted to highlight and expose, because what's happening all around the country is that individuals are being incarcerated. You mentioned Jim Crow and the Jim Crow laws. But because a person is incarcerated, locked up, and given a charge, right, you do not lose your citizenship.
Sure.
So this is, you know, this is somewhat form of double jeopardy.
Yeah.
You know, we're not able to vote. Go ahead, bro.
We have our other guest joining us by Zoom. His name is Van Jones. He's a dynamic U.S. media personality, entrepreneur, and a world-class change maker. He's been nominated and won a couple of Emmys. He's on the New York Times bestseller list. He's on CNN on a regular basis. And I've been impressed with your presentations and knowledge on it. Good morning, Van Jones, for joining us.
Well, good morning to you, sir. I'm glad to be talking to you on such an important day.
This is the day, and this is a 2-hour show. The first hour, we dealt with the voting rights of returning citizens. This hour, we're talking about to see what we could do to mobilize and get folks to realize how important is it. As I mentioned, we got 79 million people, Van, with criminal records. 79 million people with criminal records.
Yes,
majority
sir.
Of whom can vote. And we haven't heard anything from either the presidential candidates in terms of their agenda or their position on criminal justice reform. And yeah. I know you're on top of this, so I'm going to throw it to you, Van. What do you see from both presidential candidates who have a criminal justice reform that we can bite into?
Well, you know, it's not like it was in 2020 where both candidates, Biden and even Trump, were running as criminal justice reformers, having supported, on Trump's side, the First Step Act, et cetera. This year is almost the opposite, but I would break it down to say, if you look at Kamala Harris's agenda, not her rhetoric, but her agenda, if you look at Trump's agenda, not his rhetoric, but his agenda, you could go so far as to say that Kamala Harris has an agenda to lift us up and Donald Trump has an agenda to lock us up. I don't really know how to say it any more clearly than that. On Donald Trump's side, he's saying he wants to bring back stop and frisk, but to make it mandatory, every police officer in the country, if their department is going to get any federal dollars at all, has to engage in stop and frisk practices, which, as you know, stopping 89%, it's always Black men, young Black men that get stopped, check their pockets, sometimes do worse than that. It's humiliating that he's making that mandatory stop and frisk. Also, Donald Trump says he wants blanket immunity for all police. So no matter what a police officer
does to you,
you cannot sue a police officer, which means lawless police. He also says that he wants to federalize street crime. So he says any quote unquote street gang or street crew, he wants the Department of Justice involved. So your cousin, your nephew hanging out with the wrong people one summer, they don't go to juvenile hall, they don't go to county jail, they go to federal court, federal prison. This is a lockdown agenda. I call it the Trump crackdown agenda. It has not been discussed enough, but you have a lot of young Black men saying they want to be owners, they want to be heads of household, they want to be entrepreneurs, they love Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump doesn't have a plan to make you an entrepreneur. Donald Trump has a plan to make you somebody behind bars. And so meanwhile, if you look at Kamala Harris's agenda, and she's not perfect, and neither you or I, but her agenda, what's on paper, is to help us. So look, no president can change your whole neighborhood and give you everything that you want. The president can only do a little bit to help you because they got to help a whole lot of other people. But Kamala Harris says, if you're going to have a baby in the next couple of years, you get a $6,000 tax credit to help you with that child. That's a little bit of help. She says, if you're a first time homeowner, $25,000 to help you with your down payment. That's a little bit of help. If you're trying to be an entrepreneur, business person, up to $50,000 of support in terms of tax breaks, in terms of direct subsidies. This has never been done. This kind of agenda. So Kamala Harris is trying to lift you up. Donald Trump is trying to lock you up. To me, that makes the vote very easy for me.
Can I say something on that? So this is Robert White for people who are listening.
Yes, sir.
What Brother Van Jones said really struck a chord with me, because what we have to understand is that this notion of federalizing street crimes, things like that are not going to be dispensed with equally. Think about the difference in how the government handled January 6th rioters who were able to march to the Capitol, storm the Capitol before somebody said, we should really call law enforcement, compared to Black Lives Matter, who were in the streets in public protest We sent the National Guard. We sent helicopters. And so when Trump is talking about federalizing street crimes, he's talking about locking up Black people and brown people. And one of the things that makes me so angry about Trump and his rhetoric and a lot of the conservative notions, the state with the most disenfranchised people because of felony convictions is Florida. So there are millions of people, the majority of them,
4 million in Florida.
The majority of them aren't even incarcerated. They can't vote for president. But this guy, this wealthy white guy, who is a Florida resident, not only can vote, but run for president after he tried to overturn the Democratic government. The contradictions here are glaring, and we have to be really aware of what we might be walking into with a Trump presidency and what it would mean for our communities.
That's all that is real good information. I just want to highlight, based on what was just said, the fact that in the district, state crimes have already been federalized. Because of the 1997 Revitalization Act, all D.C. residents serve their time in a federal facility. They face with federal laws. They do 85% of their time. So D.C. has already been federalized. And we need to be looking at how to repeal the 1997 Revitalization Act.
Wait, let me go back to Van. He ain't got but a few more minutes to be with us. Hey, Van, what would you say? We got listeners listening to Crossroads all around the world and out of the country and et cetera. And a lot of folks that we found out, surprisingly, a lot of men inside institutions are supporting Trump. And I found that very strange to find that kind of come. What have you found in your travels?
As Tuesday, November 5th approaches, the Pacifica Network is preparing to bring you relevant and resonant election night coverage. The coverage will include discussion of the most salient issues of this election cycle, as well as updates on down-ballot races, state and local initiatives, and on-the-ground reporting from coast to coast. Voter suppression, Palestine, the economy, immigration, abortion rights, and so much more are at stake with this presidential election. November 5th, 8 p.m. until midnight, you'll hear analysis, discussion, and community voices from around the country presented by the Pacifica Network. The day after, November 6th, Verna Avery Brown hosts What's at Stake the morning after post-election coverage. That's Tuesday, November 5th, 8 p.m., and Wednesday, November 6th, 9 a.m., election coverage, as only WPFW can present it. WPFW, presenting a better world, one broadcast at a time.
His plans in 20, when he was president, he did do positive things on criminal justice reform. Democrats hate it when I say that, but the facts are the facts. But the Republicans hate when I say, but his plans now are to undo all that and to do even more damage than was ever contemplated. When you're talking about mandatory stop and frisk for every police officer in America, when you're talking about no police officer can be sued no matter what they do to you.
And that's that ain't right.
Yeah, I mean, now the shame on the Democrats for not making this known. It's written down on paper. Everybody responded to crazy stuff he says at a speech. I don't care about a speech. A speech can be, why am I worried about what a white man says on a microphone? Crazy stuff for 400 years. What did you put on paper that is going to be your written down plan? That written down plan is more obscene than any words he's ever spoken. And much more dangerous. You know, people will laugh their way all the way to the gas chamber, not knowing where the clown is leading them. This is a clown tickling everybody's funny bone, leading us to the gas chamber. Yeah. And there is a big problem because, obviously in a 100-day campaign, Kamala Harris can't be expected to do everything. But there was a big mistake that was made, Roach, and you know it and I know it, sitting up here lecturing young Black men rather than listening to young Black men.
Yes.
Telling young Black men what you gonna do, what you bet do, in terms of voting, and not saying, what do you need? What is your fear? What is your hope? Once you start listening to these young Black men, and they're saying they want to be owners, entrepreneurs, and heads of household, and you can point to concrete written down plans, not speeches, I don't like how she laughs, I don't care about how somebody laughs or what they say. What is your concrete written down plan? I can show you the concrete written down plan to help you become an entrepreneur, to help you become a head of household, to help you become a family man, if that's what you want, help you with your baby, help you with your first house, help you with your first business. She has a concrete written down plan for that. You know, your concrete, this man that you just admire because he's this and he's that, and he owns this, blah, blah, blah. This man's written down plans, wrote down a plan, would not be as bad as the plan that this man has written down for you. And so that's why I appreciate you, you know, Rose, for trying to get people true and good information. We have been so easily misled by image. Oh, I don't like her. She's a woman. She laughs funny. I don't, when she talks, she don't feel authentic to me. How much authentic talking do you think a president of the United States is doing? Show me an authentic president. That has nothing to do with anything. What are they promising to do? Because I'm going to tell you, having worked in the White House for Barack Obama, when you hit that door, the clock is ticking toward the midterms, and all you have to go on is what the concrete written down plans are. And you can't talk to the president today. You're going to take whatever those plans are. You're going to implement them. And if those plans are good, they'll be good, good like Obama. If they're bad, they're going to be terrible. And I'm going to tell you, Donald Trump, I don't care what he eat, fine. He can be rude and racist, but if his written down plans will help me, I'm going to look at him. Mm-hmm. He can be as nice as can be. If his written down plans won't help me, I ain't got no time for him. We're focusing on image, style, nonsense. I don't like, sometimes it doesn't seem like she be coming off correct. And how you're talking about a politician. You're not talking about somebody you're going to have to live with and shower with and go to the store with and hang out all day. We are focused on the wrong things. And so I appreciate you for giving me the opportunity to point people toward the concrete written down plans of this man, which are the worst written down plans of any president has ever run since slavery. I tell you one more question. I got to go, but I had to get on with you. You asked me to come. I said, if I don't go on with Roach,
I'll bite your ears off, man.
Tyson.
Thank you, man. Thank you. We'll get you back, and we just do an in-depth one-on-one interview because there's a lot of things we want to talk about. But I want to appreciate and thank you for taking
the word
time.
Thank your wife. You wouldn't be known without her, so thank her too.
You know it. Thanks a lot, Van, and we'll be back in touch with you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, bye.
All right. One of the things we said earlier, I grew up in the hood, and if somebody disrespect me or disrespect my wife or call her a name or disrespect your sons and your daughters, degrade you, demean you, then they expect you to support them. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It ain't about Democrats or Republicans. It's about treating a man or a human being how you want to be treated. Yep. And this man is not treating us as human beings.
Yep.
And that's my bottom line. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, or watermelon. It don't make no difference to me.
Yep.
But you can't disrespect my family. When I called you, Robert White, your little daughter answered the phone.
Yeah.
And it made, this is Robert White's phone, and please leave a message. I said, listen to this little thing. Yeah. Yeah. It made me feel so good and warm inside because we got our granddaughter on our phone. Mm. And when you pick up a phone and hear a little kid,
yeah,
I don't care how mad you stand there and just smile. She said, my daddy is not in right now. I said, could you have him call me, honey bunny?
That's it. But like to bring these two points together, you know, when people disrespect you or say things that threaten your family or your city, you got to take it seriously. So I'll share a story with you. The weather has been so nice in D.C. Last week in the middle of the workday, I decided to work outside for a little bit. Well, I see this cat in the bushes in my next door neighbor's yard. So my first thought is, if you break into my neighbor's house, you'll break into the house where my family lives. Yeah. So I went up to him. And I said, can I help you to do ran? Yeah. I ran after him because at the end of the day, I'm a nice guy. People know me. I'm a nice guy, but I'm a DC guy, right? And I don't play that with family. So I ran after the guy. I managed to get a shot of his place and sent it to the police. But it makes me think about this election and what it means for DC. Because I feel about my city the same way I feel about my family. And I worry about the real threat that Donald Trump would be to my city, to our city. The level, like creating a more volatile situation with our neighborhoods, like sending in the National Guard. Like they're not trained the way that our police are trained. The idea of making penalties harsher just to kind of prove a point. His ability to overturn our laws or even to get rid of our home rule government.
Yeah.
Like I hope folks notice DC has a government, like you can elect a council and a mayor because of an act of Congress, and they could get rid of it. The president, without any act of Congress, could take over our police force. So the threats to DC,
yes.
our home, are real, and we got to take those seriously.
You know, one of the things that I've been talking about is about housing, Councilmember White. We got over 200-300 men and women released every month from various prisons around the country. And I get calls. I got buddies that I ain't seen since 72. They did 50 and 55 years there in the street. And I understand they only have 60 or 20 vouchers designated for returning citizens. And we have over 70,000. And believe this, I applied for a voucher 22 years ago, and I'm still on the list. I went got a job and bought me a house. What do you worry about? So that's what you got to do. But one of the things we're concerned with, what can we do, Councilmember White, to get some emergency housing vouchers? Because we understand that the city spent $49 million to relocate the migrants in D.C. But I don't see that $49 million spread across the board for folks who are citizens in Washington, D.C., who ain't got a place to stay or job. Also, I had to duck people, Councilmember. I don't have $40, $50 in my pocket. But when I see two, three guys, they need $20 or $30, they got it. I got a wife and we got a little savings account. So I can go back and get me $50, $100. But when you see somebody who did 50 years and he said, man, please help me. Yeah. That's something else. The suicide rate for returning citizens is on the increase. We got a thing we came up with called prison side. There's homicide, suicide, genocide. But you got prison side of men who are committing crimes to go back to prison or killing themselves or take a shot of drugs because they can't put up with this. What can we do, sir?
Yeah, so I'm glad you're raising this. And we've got to be really serious about the depth of this problem. So when my brother came home from Petersburg, they gave him permission eventually to leave the halfway house, then Hope Village, to live with me. So I was the person he was approved to live with. And we went to the grocery store one evening after I got home from work, the Safeway on Alabama Avenue, and we're walking back to the car. My brother had been gone for a couple of years, but he stopped to talk to this guy, and I kept walking to the car. When my brother got back to the car, I asked him how he knew the guy, and he said, we were in Petersburg together. And I said, oh, who's he living with? And he said, he's living at the shelter. And that hurt my heart. And as I dug into this issue and pulled that thread, what I realized was how common that is. Folks have been incarcerated 5 years, 20 years, 50 years. Most of them didn't have stable housing before they went.
That's
and
right.
They definitely don't have it when they get home. So we see the cycle of people going from the prison to the halfway house to a homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And we've got to do something about that. So there are a couple things we've got to do. One, I've been able to create, you know, a handful of housing vouchers specific for returning citizens. I need other members of the council to fund some of those because I'm like cutting
budgets.
What can
we do to help with that?
I need people to advocate to their elected official. I can tell them it matters, but I'm going to be honest with you. Residents' voices matter to my colleagues more than my voice for reasons I understand. That's who elects them. So we need people who believe that we need more housing support for returning citizens to make their voices heard at the DC council and to the mayor.
Go ahead, Charles.
So I just want to highlight, you know, vouchers are great, and that's a good tool to use to help with these issues. currently, as you all know, when folks are released from the federal system, you know, typically there's a halfway house stay.
And we don't have a halfway house in D.C. for men.
Absolutely. You know, we don't have a halfway house for men in the district. And we have a residential reentry house for women that houses 10 people.
On Gene Street?
That's been approved 10? For 10 people.
Wow.
That's it. You know, and outside of that, there is no reentry housing in the district. Now, we do have certain other type of beds that are available. Some are used by folks coming home, but you have to have a whole host of other issues, mental health, HIV, et cetera, to get access to those houses. So currently, there is no reentry houses in the district specific
wow.
for individuals coming home from incarceration.
Wow. You know, boy, that's sad. There's no reentry for, man, it's, I'm telling you, our men have to be sent to Baltimore and to Richmond for staying in a halfway house. And a lot of these men come out, as you said, y'all, they release, and you're supposed to get up to, like, $300 or $500 in gate money or release money called gratuitous money. And if you got $5 or $10 in your institutional account, you do not get that $30, $50, or $100. Mm-hmm. And we had a case last year that was devastating. Of a guy did 40 years. He had a stroke, heart attack. He was going blind. He was disabled, and he couldn't communicate. He was released, and his family called the prison and said, can we come up and get him? Because he needed to be escorted. They put him on the bus from Hagerstown. And when the bus got to D.C., he wasn't on the bus. So they checked all the cameras all the way back up to Hagerstown, and they couldn't find the picture of this guy getting off the bus. So the family called the police and the FBI. And this was in January of last year. Until April, they couldn't find him. His mother got on the Metro bus, walking down the bus, and looked over and saw her lost son.
Oh, my God.
And that's how she connected with it. So this case is only one that highlights the need for having support, assistance for these men and women coming out. And this was written up in the Washington Post, a couple more stories. But that case just so highlight the need. Also, council member, we just read last week that 3,600 students, D.C. public school students, notified the school that they have housing insecure properties. Mm-hmm. 3,600. Now, there's a 7,000 who didn't come to the school. So we got a housing problem for our youth. And all these laws coming down from the Attorney General and different folk, locking up kids, curfews. The curfews don't work. The kids ain't got no job. They ain't got no home. The mother and father ain't there. And we just talk about locking up our kids because it's easier to remove them as opposed to resolve the issue.
Yeah.
And this crisis feeds into all these other crises. Yeah. You got a hell of a job, man. People call me you all the time about what can be done, but we need vouchers, housing. These guys need, one guy asked me, he said, man, give me $10. And he cried. He said, Roach, don't tell nobody. He was a big drug boy. He asked for $10. Mm-hmm. I said, man, I give it to you. I gave him the 10. He said, man, we don't have even a stipend. They give this home, the migrants in New York get a $1,500 debit card for relocation purposes in New York City. I don't know how they spent the $49 million down in D.C. in the last 2 years to house and relocate the migrants, but how much money emergency funds is available for those men and women coming out of prison with nothing?
Yeah. So let me say this with that. I visited one of the migrant shelters last year, I don't like these, like, tours where the agencies only show you the places they want you to see and talk to the people they want you to talk to. So I left the tour and I just started talking to a couple Latino brothers who were there. And I asked them, you know, why'd you come here? And they got bused from Florida. And they said, we have kids and we came to make a better life for our kids. That's the same thing I do. And that's the same thing I would do. I don't like sort of pitting folks who are struggling against other folks who are struggling. We got a big enough budget that it shouldn't matter what we do for the migrants. We should have enough to help our folks. But some of this is, like you said, we got to do it all. We need to build more housing. We need more vouchers. We need more housing specifically for returning citizens. And so one of the things that folks are going to see me take on in the next couple months is this housing crisis that we're looking at. We can't just keep doing the same thing, having the same stale arguments and staying in the same place. So the only way to make progress here is to take a couple black eyes. I take black eyes for the cause. And so I want people to kind of, as you see this issue moving, I want you to listen with your own ears and think with your own mind, because there are going to be people on the business side and people on the advocacy side who don't like what I'm doing. But I'm not going to sit here and do nothing when I see such a magnificent housing crisis and so many of our folks in shelters, homeless, housing unstable, our kids, returning citizens, grandmas. We can't just keep sitting here and having the same old debates.
You know, part of that is when these men have come out like this with no help, no support, then they die.
Yeah.
We got another, let's say, a crisis within a crisis. For some reason, men who do 20, 30, 40 years, I know men and women come out, they die within 2 to 3 years after being released.
Yeah.
You know, and we got a program to set up some emergency housing using containers. We went there 7 years ago and talked to the mayor's office about building container apartments and modular units on some available city property. These container apartments can be put up in 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
We can house some people in there. We even got the proposal. We tried, and every time we turn around, we run into what we call jiggy boogie. There's always some jiggy boogie that keep us from doing something. So we need housing.
Yeah.
So you go ahead, Charles.
Well, the only thing, and it's encouraging to hear the council member talk about the efforts that he's getting ready to undertake. One only thing I would highlight is that, man, it is a tremendous NIMBY issue in the district. I don't care where you go at, you know, what ward now, there's a NIMBY issue that's just amazing. Anytime
explain what you mean by NIMBY.
Mention,
explain what you mean.
Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
When you even mention the idea of building a structure or building something for formerly incarcerated people and people returning from incarceration to live in neighborhoods, cringe.
Yeah.
They cringe and they come up and they rise up. They rise up, you know, against their own people. You know, and it's just this.
What can be done to fight that? How can we fight that?
Well, you know, we successfully over in Ward 7. Were able to go through zoning and was, you know, able to get a house zoned for that purpose, right? And it's crazy because it's empty and it's zoned for men and women returning from incarceration. Went through the zoning process, you know, so now it's there, it's zoned, but it's empty. There's been no resources put forward to, you know, to use it for that purpose, you know. So, but in most cases, you got to be willing to, you know, go through zoning to do this.
Okay.
There are some institutions, for example, Oxford Houses are federally zoned so that, you know, and they deal more with folks with substance use disorder, and it's. Fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of individuals that come home have untreated addiction.
Yes.
So they are eligible to live in Oxford Houses, and that was federally zoned, you know, and there's Oxford Houses all over the city. But, you know, again, it's because of that zoning that, you know, they're able to operate.
You know, we're going to take a break. This is WPFW 89.3 FM on your dial. This is Crossroads, and your host is Roach Brown, and my wife is Mertine in the Nkechi Taifa. This is our second hour of our two-hour special that we do every month that we come to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. One of the things I wanted to suggest to you, council member, is that those men and women, the FCC just ruled that they capped the prison phone call rates. They used to be for $15 for 15 minutes. Now it's down to 6 or 12 cents, so they cut it. But they're still abusing it, all right? One of the problems that we were suggesting is that this ties into what we suggested earlier, is that the prison phone industry makes over $8 billion a year. And when a prison allow a private phone company to provide services to that population, they give the prison a commission or a kickback. And the guards use this money for picnics, barbecues, for the Young Correctional Officers Association. They got all those groups. This is money that we pay in from using the telephone.
Yeah.
That money should go to the inmate welfare fund so you can increase the money from these men coming out of prison.
Yeah.
Our pain is their gain. So when Congressman Eleanor Norton passed the bill, when Congressman Norton had a little bill last month she passed about businesses that have contracts with the BOP, the Bureau of Prisons, no minority company that we are aware of have any contract with the Bureau of Prisons. And all our prisoners are going from here, over 6,000 to the feds, and the money that they get from money orders, there's a fee for the money orders, there's a fee for the deposited, there's a fee for inactivity. You get a car and you don't spend it. So I'm saying we need to look at how we can get some of that money that's spent, generated by inmates and their families for the phone calls, video calls, money orders, etc. That money should be earmarked to a fund for the gate fund for them men and women coming out of prison. It's $8 billion a year. Yeah. And they won't give a guy $10 when he come out after 30 years. So it's a lot of inequities and imbalances. So I wanted to share that with you. I think we got a call on. How many we have, Mike? We'll take it. You're on the air. Question or comment, please.
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, man.
I was wondering where you was, Rick. I knew you'd call in from Germany.
I just want to say thank you for having on Van Jones, young black men and white women across America will make or break Kamala Harris. Trump is no joke. There are a lot of black people in the poor neighborhoods, in criminal families, mafia families, who think Mr. Trump is going to spread around money to the streets. And this second time around, he is going to betray the black community to racist, middle Christian America. And that is no joke. So I just want to say thank you for having Van Jones on your show.
Thank you.
I'm done, man.
Councilman White, what would you say to our listening audience? Because we got men, women, and their families who are hurting about housing, homelessness, jobs, employment, medical services. Over the D.C. jail, they got a problem with the Unity Health. They don't have all the right enough staff to complement it. So everywhere you look in the criminal justice field, it's unequal, it's imbalanced, and we as blacks are suffering the most with the least. So what can you say? I know your role is limited on the county. What can you say or do to help us to deal with some of this housing, homelessness, stipends, whatever we can do immediately to help? We need help.
We do. So I would say two things. One, keep talking to me about what's needed. We made a lot of progress over my two terms, but we still got a long way to go. But the other thing that we've got to do is stay involved. It is easy to point out the problems, but we got to recognize that all the easy answers have been found. Ain't no more easy problems on the table. These are hard problems. And that means that we can't like point fingers at other people, look for somebody else to do something. We all need to play our part. My part is introducing, passing legislation, sometimes taking black eyes at people in Ward 7 who will never vote for me again because I push for that halfway house. But we've all got to play our part, whether it's reaching out to your council members, running for public office, getting involved in a campaign. Every one of us can play a part in moving it forward. But we've got to recognize these are difficult issues. And so I can't do it by myself. No other person can do it by itself. Roach, you can't do it by yourself as great as you are. Charles, as phenomenal as he is, can't do it by himself. But if we all play our part, we will make progress. But we need all of us to kind of take stock of what our part is, what we're doing, what we need to do, and we need to go do it.
You know, I was like to suggest that what we could do for this housing problem is to get tie into the churches and the senior citizens. All these churches are closed all week long, open on Sundays. And you got thousands of men and kids. We got over several thousand. Nobody knows how many kids are homeless. But yet we're passing laws to lock them up for stop and frisk. You can't hang on the corner, this kind of. It's always punishment for the youth. all over the country. They're implementing laws designed for curfew, lock up the kids, taking the trial as 10 and 12 years old as adults. And I used to say something when I got locked up, and they said, you gave me life, and society demands you pay a price for your debt, mm-hmm. for what you did. I broke the law, and I had to pay a price to society. What do you do when society breaks the law against you?
Yeah.
How do you get society to pay, step up to the plate, when you've been erroneously or unjustly treated? Or...
Yeah. Let me give you the hard answer that comes. Look, life ain't fair, and the more time you spend trying to ask why it's not fair, the more time you waste. You got to get in and grapple with it. What I see too often is people who don't like how things are, and they say, that's why I don't get involved. Well, if you don't like how things are, that's double the reason you should get involved. If we had more returning citizens engaged in campaigns, running for office, we would make more progress. But the more people disengage, then the lower on the priority poll their issues go. So we need people to really get engaged. Democracy is a very imperfect way of government, but it's the best one we know. And it only works if we are active in it. So we've got to do something with these frustrations. That's what I try to do in my life. But to the point that you mentioned about these young people, that's something that makes me so angry. We don't like what young people are doing, and the answer is so often, we should be harder on them. No, you are not listening, right? These young people are talking, sometimes with their actions, sometimes with their words, and you've got to listen. So seeing so many people who were saying to me this time last year, you got to pass stricter laws to hold juveniles more accountable, you got to lock their parents up. I said, no, the first thing we need to do is listen to young people. I spent months going around the city listening to young people, and then I developed legislation based on those conversations. There are three things that I'm trying to do based on those conversations to push down juvenile crime. One, a major expansion of trade and vocational education. These young people need money. They want to work, and a lot of them are not going to college. Well, that doesn't have to mean that there's no hope for a strong future. My grandfather was able to raise a whole family without a college degree or high school diploma. You know, people still need to work with their hands. The second thing I'm doing, young people across the city kept telling me they needed more guidance. Now, I don't know about everybody else, but when I was in high school, I didn't think I needed guidance. I thought I knew everything. So when young people are saying we need more guidance, we got to give it to them. So I wrote a bill that would allow all of our 34,000 DC government employees to take 1 hour of paid leave a week to mentor or tutor a young person in this city. Like, there are things we can do, but first we got to listen, and two, we got to be solution oriented.
You know, I believe in the same thing. Everybody has to get involved. I've been working here at the Chili Bowl with Kamal Ali, Kenny Barnes, and some more people. We've been meeting every week, Brother White, in terms of trying to come up with a program called We All Are Involved, mm-hmm. to mobilize and collaborate with 40, 50, 60 nonprofits to see what we can do to address the crime, the carjacking, the drug overdoses, the homelessness, et cetera. And it's a monumental task.
Yeah.
And we need this, but I want to suggest before we leave, we got a few minutes. What would you say to our people, my population who is listening, who need jobs, housing, they need a stipend. Some of these guys just need a damn stipend. We can't even get a stipend for some of these guys. We have meetings, and some of them can't come to the meeting. I said, why? He said, man, I can't ride the bus. He said, he got on the bus and he asked for a transfer, and everybody started laughing at him. He left the street 35 years ago, and when he got on the bus, you could get a transfer and ride all day long.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't like that no more. So they told him he had to get another transfer. He said, what kind of system is this? I got to pay again to ride another bus.
Right.
There's no more transfers. So when you come back to a society that everything didn't change, and you have to learn everything like you're an infant, and there's no programs or stuff to deal with that. But again, I'm fighting for housing. We need jobs. We can create jobs. If every church, you're talking about the summer youth jobs in Maryland, they need jobs when the summer's over. I had a 5-year-old kid ask me for a job, and I started laughing. He said, I need a job, Mr. Roach.
Yeah.
Should I get him the job taking out the trash? He came back in 2 days. I said, what's happening? He said, I need a raise. I said, you need a raise.
It's a different generation.
He said, because 5 ain't enough.
Yeah.
Now, if he had 5 years old and recognized he need money, what about these kids, 10, 11, 12, 13, and you got to wait till they're 18 or 20 to get a job? So we need to bring the business community to everybody got to get involved.
They do.
We can solve this problem
yep.
if we work collectively with each other, man, and yeah. pop that jiggy boogie and put your ego on the side.
That's right.
Because we're talking about young lives.
Yeah.
And we can save some lives. Our time is up. You want to get some closing remarks?
I'll just say, what's that? Oh, thank you. My number three point was truancy. getting resources to families in school earlier, yeah. more quickly. Because when young people aren't going to school, that's the first big sign that something's yeah. going off the rails. We need to get some help to that school and to that family. But let me say this in closing, and just to take what you were just saying. I'm 42 today. I've been working since I was in the seventh grade. And that's because
you're 42.
I'm 42.
You older than me.
Can't you tell? So I needed some money, right? And my family didn't have money. My dad is a single father. So I went to a barbershop on First and Kennedy Street. Shout out to Kevin Williamson at Midtown Barbershop, still there on First and Kennedy. And I said, can I sweep your floors? And he said, yeah. And that was my first job. And we do need more of our community involved in that way. I'm not the first and I definitely weren't the last person that Kevin paid to sweep floors. We got those businesses, those churches across our cities, but we need to stop trying to be too smart for our own good. We need to find these common sense solutions that are sitting in front of us. Mm-hmm. Most of them we find by listening to people. Last thing I'll say in closing, again, because it's election day, we need to make sure we don't vote for or against somebody because things aren't perfect, because every problem hasn't been solved. We need to figure out who is going to move the ball forward for us and for our families, and we need to vote for them. And if we don't see anybody, then we got to jump in and run ourselves. But whoever you vote for, however you vote, most important thing is to vote. And so I encourage people to vote, but we gotta keep moving the ball forward.
Our guest has been Van Jones, a CNN commentator, as well as local DC City Councilman Robert White. We've been talking about the voting rights and the returning citizen population, the presidential election, and what can be done and what role that we could play in all this. And I just want to say in closing that, folk, you got to vote. Hey, Mike, play that PSA. Then we go to the closing. This is election day. People vote. Vote. All you guys in sales, solitary, dormitory, detention facilities, if you can't vote, get on the phone and call your wife, brother, mother, sister, cousin, nephew. Get them to vote. You keep calling us asking for help. Here's a way that you can help yourself by voting or getting somebody else to vote on your behalf to make sure we can have people participate. Because, folks, if we don't vote today, if you think it's rough today, it's going to be rougher tomorrow, and it might not be a tomorrow. So this is Roach Brown coming to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl on the historic U Street with my wife, Martine. She just giving me them signals, and I love this woman so much. You know what I mean? Do you love me, woman? This is my wife. You know, I don't call
it a record for everybody who can't see. I didn't see a head nod. Yes. We know she tolerates you.
So thank you. We'll see you next week. Thanks to City Councilman Robert White, who has always been available for us to approach, and he's doing whatever he can to help us. But we need more and more help. We need housing. We need jobs. We need stipends. We need everything. And we're talking about these youth. We can save lives. Councilman, we got what we got the horses, but we don't have the resources. We got folk ready to work, to risk their life, and go into neighborhoods where nobody going to. But because of all this stuff that's going on in the Juggy Boogie, you get tired of going through the Juggy Boogie. So whatever you can do to help us, anybody that's listening can help us. Returning citizens are human beings. And if you think that, if you don't want to work with us, Jesus Christ was in a cell when he took him out and crucified him. He was in a cell. So being in a cell don't make you less or more than anybody else. We all can subject to go through that. You just ain't been caught yet. You know what I mean? So it ain't against the law to break the law. It's against the law to get caught. Just don't get caught. This has been Roach Brown coming to you live from the historic Ben's Chili Bowl with Crossroads, heard worldwide. Thank you. Our guests have been City Councilman Robert White and Van Jones and Charles Thornton. So until next week, take care. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. And vote!
trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going.
Pacifica Radio, I'm Scott Baba. It's election day, and a presidential campaign marked by upheaval and rancor is approaching its finale. Americans are voting this election day whether to send Donald Trump back to the White House or elevate Kamala Harris to the Oval Office. They face a stark choice between two candidates who have offered drastically different temperaments and visions. Harris, the Democratic vice president, stands to be the first female president elected. She's promised to work across the aisle to tackle economic worries. Trump, the Republican former president, has vowed to replace thousands of federal workers with loyalists, impose sweeping tariffs on allies and foes alike, and stage the largest deportation operation in U.S. history. Sagar Magani reports.
Donald Trump and Kamala Harris made a final furious push before Election Day in an already unprecedented race.
Hello, beautiful, beautiful North Carolina.
Oh, it's good to be back in Pennsylvania.
They focused on the battlegrounds, some of the seven states that'll essentially decide this election.
It's ours to lose.
Momentum is on our side.
Trump would become the first person convicted of a felony to win the White House.
4 years we've all waited for this.
Harris, the first woman, the first black woman, the first person of South Asian descent.
America is ready for a fresh start.
And an end to a race that's seen a felony trial, an incumbent president pushed off the ballot, and two assassination attempts. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Meanwhile, tens of millions of Americans have already cast their ballots. Those include record numbers in battleground states like Georgia and North Carolina. Despite long lines in some places and a few hiccups common to all elections, early in-person and mail voting has processed without major problems. The absence of any significant problems has not stopped Trump from making claims of fraud about election interference, a likely prelude to challenges after Election Day. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner says the city's well prepared for any election violence.
Anybody who thinks it's time to insult, to deride, to mistreat, to threaten people, F around and find out.
Officials nationwide are beefing up security, but an AP poll shows 4 in 10 voters say they're very worried about a violent attempt to overturn the results. Others say they mistrust local or state election officials. Researchers at the University of Washington Center for an Informed Public say they're already seeing false election claims focusing on Pennsylvania, the largest swing state. Kate Starbird, the center's co-founder, says misinformation might start with a small truth, like an isolated case of a voting machine recording a ballot entry the voter didn't want, but can snowball.
When people are saying the machines aren't working, this is true. It starts as a rumor, but eventually becomes just fact. But it gets twisted into this narrative that it's an intentional effort to disenfranchise certain voters, and that's false. So we can see that sort of intentionality is one place it gets twisted.
According to New York Times research, right-wing extremist groups are starting to coordinate on the social media platform Telegram. The paper spoke to police who warned against dismissing the thousands of messages they examined. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
An Israeli airstrike in northern Gaza killed at least 20 people today, mostly women and children, as Israel continues a nearly month-long air and ground operation in what was already the most isolated and heavily destroyed part of the territory. The strike late Monday hit a home where several displaced families were sheltering in the town of Beit Lahia near the border with Israel. This according to Hassam Abu Safia, the director of the recently raided and barely functioning Kamal Adwan Hospital, which received the casualties. The Israeli military said it targeted a weapons storage facility from which a militant had operated and that, quote, numerous steps were taken to mitigate the risk of harming civilians. Charles de Ledesma reports.
Hassam Abu Safia, the director of a nearby hospital that received the casualties, said the strike had hit a home in the Tamabed Lahia, where multiple families were sheltering. And in the central town of Zawada, an Israeli airstrike had hit a tent. An Israeli airstrike had hit a tent where a displaced family was sheltering, killing four people, including a mother and her two children.